Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today I have with me your other host, Carl.
What's happening, Kat?
And your other host, Tom.
Hello, Kat. Nice to be here.
And today we will discuss Daredevil. Netflix. Do you have to do that in the middle of me like speaking?
Oh, sorry. Please continue. The tension was too much. I couldn't contain it.
So what had happened was, okay, everybody who listens knows Cat school, blah blah. That and so, but it finally happened for me. I liked Daredevil a lot. It took up until the third episode for me to really like be drawn in, because it was just something about it or whatever. But after the third episode and the hallway fight scene with the Russians, I was sold, because I think that had to be the best fight choreography that I have seen on television or anywhere for a very long time. It was sloppy, it was real, it was visceral, it was beautiful to me, and I loved it. And after that episode, I just loved all things Daredevil.
It had fight choreography. It was like a dance.
Yeah, but it wasn't like the dance like you see like River Tam and like Firefly or Serenity, you know, because hers kind of looked like a dance. His was this masculine, rough, sloppy dance. And it looked real. You know, it looked like how if people were really on the street fighting, it was more boxing and less kung fu. Yeah. If that's a, if you can follow me there.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It was ugly brawling. Ugly brawling. You can feel them hits.
So Tom.
Yeah. I like the fight scenes. I almost had the opposite reaction. I was almost thinking this guy knows a whole lot of kung fu. As the show moves on, it seems like everybody but me in the universe knows kung fu. There's good, I guess, a couple of good things. I like the characters. I like Foggy a lot.
Yeah.
The blonde is the secretary is a warm soul. You believe her being the innocent one. The acting is good. I love the bromance between Foggy and Daredevil.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That kind of like non-sexual devotion.
you can tell they've been hanging a while. They go back.
Yeah. And I think when Daredevil finally tells the truth about who he is and Foggy leaves him, and you see how crushed Daredevil is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's just totally crushed by his friend leaving him, and that was pretty touching to me. Yeah. And of course, Rosario Dawson.
Oh, what?
Showing up.
I love her.
Nice.
She's just showing up everywhere.
So happy.
I love her so much. Yeah. And in the way apparently Carl does, but whatever.
No one likes Rosario the way I do. Hey, girl.
Well, I will fight you for her in a kung fu like brawl.
Hang on, let me get my pet. Oh no, never mind.
I think Tom, you too know kung fu. You just haven't had an opportunity to use it. But I think if you were in the street and somebody was trying to kick your ass, I think you'd break it out. But you're in Texas, so maybe you'll just shoot them because open carry. So but
I have to turn the lights out to get my extrasensory perception going. I don't know.
We hadn't done it blindfolded. That's the real trick. That's what we the real card.
I think that would not go well. So, I mean, let's talk about the story. I felt that we've seen stories done before where the character had a handicap and they tried to solve crime we've seen this type of thing before. However, I think this puts a new edge on it, a new grittiness on it, and an extra tiny spin, because he's a little special, because there's something that like in the goo that made him go blind, it gave him some sort of extra powers, perhaps. That's
some extra sensory perception going.
Right, it's extra ordinary on top of like anybody else who has a handicap that the other senses get, but his is like heightened.
You can smell your heart beating and et cetera.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting. And I like that a lot, because there's some there's a mystery about like what was in that to make him go blind. If he saw a whole bunch of other blind people that were like preparing drugs, did they get blinded the same way? Do they have the same?
They did not get blinded the same way.
Okay. Yeah, I think they were collected by Madame Gao, is it her name? Mm-hmm. I forget her name.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, we've seen, you remember that short-lived show, Ironsides, where the guy was in a wheelchair solving crime? I'm pretty sure. Mantis, wasn't he in a wheelchair?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Yes, he was.
Then they had this other show, other guy, he was blind and he was solving crimes. And it was, I don't know, sometimes they just don't write them to where they're compelling or something. I don't know. And I always like, I can't watch it. And then I feel like a dick for not being able to watch the person with a handicap solving crime, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, I'm a horrible person.
This guy's not really handicapped though, is he?
But the only thing is like he can't really see, but he kind of can.
Of course.
He kind of can see like... Yeah,
we got a glimpse into the way he sees the world as this kind of two-tone vision he's got all kinds of sonar where he can kind of see through stuff and get glimpses of things, so...
Yeah, I really enjoy that. So it doesn't, and the fact that he's a badass, but he's not grizzled. Like he still has like a heart of gold.
Yeah.
Right? And and an innocence to want to like protect the protected less, or however you say that. Don't quote me on that.
Can I say a little bit about the tone?
Yeah, let's go ahead. Everybody just jump in. I'm just rambling. Go ahead.
The look of Daredevil got my attention right away. When the show starts, it has this dark look to it that feels a little different from other things that
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, it's not like S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, I'm just saying it feels different from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with the exception of, you know, what we're going to be discussing next, I hadn't seen a superhero series that maintained this kind of darkness in a way that was consistent and rich. It's just... Most of the time, when you think about a superhero film or a superhero series, it's all bright and colorful and sort of like flashy and always sort of like brilliant daylight kind of craziness. I don't think, did anything ever happen during the day? They must have come out at some point, but you don't remember it. All you remember is, you know, alleys. It looked like it just finished raining. Everything downstairs in a swampy kind of environment. But it was something about the mood.
Because it was shot in New York and they don't really have daylight because of all the buildings.
Shut out the light. Yeah, I mean, but it was just, it was so well done. It, you do get the feeling like, do these people really have jobs? Because it's sort of like, okay, and they file the paper away and then they're out in the street again. But everybody has got an issue in Daredevil. I mean, whether they're the heroes, whether they're the quote sidekick, whether they're the villain, everybody has got a problem. Nobody really gets away innocent and comes across as just the pure, well, you know, a pure
Foggy, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like the way he abandoned his friend. That was a problem for me. So yeah. I think he wasn't entirely perfect either.
Yeah, I mean, just everybody seems damaged, but that's what makes the characters even more believable and even more relatable and very different from what we see in a lot of other comic books shows. So, man, it's something about that just drew me in. It just felt very different from other things mm-hmm. that we've seen. The pacing of it is odd as well.
It is.
How do you describe it? Because
I wouldn't say it's slow to boring, but it's a slow burn, but it's a slow blue burn, maybe.
Yeah. Because I will agree with you that it took a while to get started. The fight scene is obviously the thing that really gets everybody's attention and really draws people in. But there was something about its oddness that drew me in earlier than the fight scene. I was excited that there was going to be that level of action in Daredevil. I wasn't sure up until that point that that's where the series was going to go. It seemed like, oh, there's going to be a lot of talking and a lot of character development. And, you know, this guy, what kind of superhero could he be, really? It's just going to be kind of quiet. But even then, the uniqueness of the environments that they had created had drawn me in. And then when they broke out with a real fight, and I mean a real fight, I said, oh, this is going to be something really, really different.
Yeah.
But it's just hard to describe the oddness of the pacing for the show, because it's not smooth arcs, and it's not bottle shows where a single show has a beginning, a crescendo, and then a quiet ending. It's not like that.
It's not quite serial. I mean, it is, but yeah, I know what you mean.
And the other thing is, this series has an odd sense of humor. There's this lightness. I mean, amongst all of the environmental gloom, there is this nuttiness to not just the characters and how they find themselves in this space. I mean, with all this dark and all of this evil and all this pain, you got mobsters coming in from across the seas. All that darkness is going on. Yet there's this kind of like, well, we're going to get a drink later. You got it. It's just this sort of funness on top of that. That again, it's just odd, sort of like the juxtaposition of all of these things, and it's just pulled off in a very unique way. That's engaging. It's fun to watch. You just like the people immediately. You even like the villain. All right, can we talk about the villain a little bit? Yeah.
Let's do that because I love the way they incorporate art into the.
Man, Fisk is cool. I mean, Fisk is really, really rich as a villain. I mean, we know all about like his childhood. We know about his background. We know about what's bothering him. He seems genuinely annoyed in a way that we can relate to. Yeah. I mean, Fisk is just
a frustrated guy. I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
First of all, he's really bad at explaining his plans. I mean, I went through every episode, and all I could get out of his plan was, "I will do anything to make the city a better place. A vision for the future. The city deserves a better tomorrow."
Man had a vision.
He wants to set free its
something
potential.
Like make America great again.
Oh. Yeah, but you never actually. He's very ambitious, but there's nothing real specific there, and nobody really asks him what he wants. Maybe he just wants to get that stop sign put in, or maybe if he was a little better at explaining what he was going to do, everyone would be like, oh, well, why didn't you just say you wanted to put vegetable gardens on the roof?
But the problem is, if you ask him to clarify, he'll probably kill you.
So, right.
You know, you got to kind of go with what he implies and get out the room.
Yeah, it just seems like he's thinking, how many people do I have to kill to start a neighborhood arts initiative?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
I like him.
A little vague, but he is kind of supposed to be a little camp. I think he's on the campier side of things. He reminds me of a big exaggerated comic book villain who's a little over the top.
Well, it's also D'Onofrio because I was getting some MIB flashbacks.
Oh, yeah.
There are a couple of moments when he was saying some stuff, and I was thinking he just stepped out the UFO. But still, he's, I don't know, you can tell he just wants to be loved.
Yeah.
Really, he just wants to be loved. Yeah. And the moments where he does let his guard down, you can see the rage seething just beyond that moment. It's always there. But you do see it, just these moments where he's with the ladies and he's trying to get this stuff together. It's pleasant. It's a sort of a well-rounded darkness.
He's got some depth.
Yeah, yeah. You don't see that enough in superhero shows, where most of the time the villain's just sort of, you know, wringing his hands and running down the street with a giant bomb, and that's about it. But yeah. This guy, whether we understand it or not, he's got a vision, and he's very passionate about his vision.
I really like, because I was taking an art class this semester, so I really appreciated the art angle on the whole thing and how he felt about, because when he first bought his piece of art in the art gallery, of course it just looks like a piece of white canvas that's all painted white with a little bit of flex on it.
Yeah.
But then, like, and we just thought he was just some rich guy buying this because he's a rich guy and he wanted to flirt with the chick, or, you know, it was a cover for laundering or something like that. But then we find out why he liked it, because it looked like the wall that he had to stare at while his father beat his mother.
Yeah.
Like, that is twisted.
That is a full picture of a villain right there.
Yeah, that was amazing.
You could delve into his childhood. That was, yeah.
I enjoyed that a lot.
Well done. Well done. I mean, just the way they revealed what it meant. They didn't tell us all out. They didn't just give, it was slowly revealed. Why does he like that painting so much? And then, and when we found out why, it made total sense. And I mean, in a satisfying way, it made sense.
It was so tragic, too. It was just like, oh, that's messed up.
Yeah.
You know,
he's a very interesting villain.
I do think, though, that when his girlfriend got killed, it reminded me of The Strain when the girlfriend got killed on there from the evil big bad guy, blah, blah, blah. So I was feeling The Strain a little bit, but I'm pretty sure they was not inspired by that at all. But it was.
Now, Vanessa didn't die, did she?
Oh! Oh no! 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 No!
She got real sick, wound up in the hospital because Madame Gao and the other crew
decided
to poison her
because
she was distracting for Fisk.
You're right. Well, so whatever. Rich girlfriends.
They were just trying to help out, I guess.
Yeah, with friends like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like Rosario Dawson's addition. I thought her on the roof with Murdoch was really good, and she's like a companion, and he's the doctor, like in Doctor Who. Like, she's trying to keep him grounded in humanity, and I don't think he really wanted to go over edge, but he really doesn't want to see somebody suffer, and he does not mind, you know, killing a bad guy in order to get a good person. But
yeah,
you know,
he's kind of torn with that. You know, I wanted to see more of that. There was a point where they went into his early years, the Daredevil,
mm-hmm.
and you see the first time he starts hearing all these voices, and he's hearing really bad situations.
Mm-hmm.
He's hearing bad things happen to people, and I thought that was really powerful. I wanted to hear a little bit more about his struggle with having to hear other people suffering and how damaging that was for him.
Mm-hmm.
In his early years. I thought that was a real heavy piece of information. I wanted to see a little more of that.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, we get this background for most of the main characters that helps to fortify who they are in the series and the decisions that they're making and what they're doing. So often when you're watching something that people think is light, like a superhero show. The motivations aren't clear, or they're very blatantly stated in a way that is not that interesting. Well, with all of the folks, they take the time to really go back into their history, or that shows you some context that justifies mm-hmm. their behavior in a way that's interesting. It's not exposition. It's always mm-hmm. when you get flashbacks, or when you go to scenes that don't involve the principals, it's not distracting, or you don't wish that they'd be over. You're sitting there going, okay, where are we going now? What are they going to show us about these folks?
And you know, the only one I wanted more on was the partner, the secretary for Fisk, who's very devoted to him, who gets killed in the second to last episode.
Oh, yeah.
He has this devotion to Fisk, and I really, really wanted to know why.
I really wanted to know.
I mean, I was expecting some backstory there, and I really wanted to know what bonded these two people. Because even Fisk, you know, here's a guy that Fisk hasn't killed yet.
Yeah, yeah. You know? That's a rare treat. Yeah, they must have gone back. There must have been something there. Yeah.
So I missed that. I thought that was a flaw that I...
Yeah, that is a missed opportunity. Maybe he'll come back in a flashback or something, you know, when we're getting some more background.
We'll see. We even got a little background on Vanessa, because I like her relationship developing with him. It's very sweet.
Oh yeah.
But I gotta ask, how bad were her previous boyfriends that she goes out with Fisk and she's like, well, at least he's honest. That was her thing. He's honest.
I don't know, man. Like,
when you start to go through the list of things that you've done wrong, and she was just hanging there with him, I was like, ooh, Matt. Yeah. And then I threw a guy off a building because he asked for a tip.
But you didn't lie about it.
Yeah.
Granted, she just had a $1,000 bottle of wine.
Oh, true, true. So, that'll get your attention there. See, Kat's thinking about it.
You'd hear a person out if they have a $1,000 bottle of wine. Now, if you go back, you know, I kind of felt like she was somehow kind of like trapped, but not trapped, because it wasn't like he was forcing her to stay with him, but there was this underlying persistence that he had that was kind of intriguing yet scary. And like, if you said no, like, what would she'd pretty much probably have to move out of town, because I don't think he would have given up, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't know, they just got used to each other or something.
I think they're slowly revealing that she deep down is a bad girl.
Yep.
She's a bad, I mean, they got to the point where she's looking out across town after he was so nice and honest with her during the meal.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking out across town and there are city blocks going up in flame.
Yep.
And it becomes a romantic moment.
It's true. She's sort of like, this is all going according to plan. I see it now.
I wanted a candlelight dinner. And
what a grand gesture. Exactly. Yeah, no, she's getting with the program, with the Fisk program. And she didn't have that far to go.
Yeah, she's a bad girl.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, whatever. Well, at least she got taken to Paris or something via helicopter.
She shuttled her out.
I guess. We'll see. But I don't know. I think that I really enjoyed the characters. And you know what I appreciated in Carlos, what you're talking about, is the little weird humor. Like, Foggy and Karen got drunk several times.
Yes, that's true.
Piss poor drunk several times. And just walking around doing nothing while Murdoch is just, you know, getting beat up and bleeding like in a dumpster on a sidewalk in an alley. Like, he has just gotten the crap beaten out of him several times. And he just kind of like gets up like he's Wolverine. And he has a healing factor and just walks it off, you know, and it's weird.
But one of the things that I do like is that you're always worried that the superheroes are too powerful, or they don't have any vulnerability. the whole thing about this guy, when you're watching Daredevil, you feel like he's feeling this. I mean, when he's getting the crap beat out of him, there's not a lot of grace. There's not a lot of he's hurting. Every punch hurts him. Every bit's hell. He manages to crawl back and to survive like a good boxer does. But it feels like he really hurts, and that's something that makes him sort of like the Batman of superheroes, because everybody else, you see the bullets bouncing off of them, or they just seem a little too powerful. He doesn't have that problem. he just keeps kind of crawling through, and even the villains are like, "You're still getting up, really?" Every time they go off on him. So I like that. I like that about it. It just sort of adds a little something extra to him as a realistic hero, I guess.
So when Daredevil was out, all we had it to compare it to for TV was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. How did that feel? Like, I enjoyed this not right off the bat, but three episodes in, whereas Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., man, it took, three seasons for me to be like, oh, okay, I'm getting to the where I like it, blah, blah. Well,
I never got to that point with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I couldn't keep watching.
Yeah, see, I mean, Kat, particularly, I have been trying to get you to watch it because we haven't really had a conversation about it, really. You know,
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I feel like
we've done an episode on it, maybe.
Well, like season one, maybe early on.
Because it was so painful.
Let's just say things have changed on you.
Yeah, it has. I need to catch up.
Things have improved, but this ain't Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This is very, very different, and that is what really made it so charming to me, because it wasn't like anything else that we see. Sure, it's not Smallville, it's not Gotham. It's like no other superhero show in terms of tone and feel and what's going on with the characters. Name another superhero series where routinely your principals go out and get drunk afterwards. They just like, I've enough of this.
Well,
and
we have one, but we're going to talk about that one later.
Again, this was first. I mean, there was nothing like that before. So it's great.
Yeah. No, I like this. It doesn't feel as depraved as the upcoming show that we will discuss.
Jessica Jones. We're talking about Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
Not quite as dark.
Yeah,
as
but so I think that's why, like, it didn't ever feel tedious to watch, even though I watch it. It felt like I could not watch it all in one sitting. You know, it's just like I'd watch it, I'd take a break, then I'd come back to it.
And you mean an episode, or you mean you couldn't binge watch it?
I couldn't binge. Well, I just didn't binge watch it. Like, I watched the first three episodes, then I was like, yeah. And then I watched like a few more, and then I stopped, and then I watched a few more, and then I was done, and I was very satisfied with it. And I mean, even though I didn't feel the need to binge watch it, I felt that was okay, you know? Like, I didn't have to. Or it wasn't, just because I didn't binge watch it, that doesn't mean that I didn't like it. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it didn't quite suck me in like Jessica Jones does, but you kind of get used to it and enjoy.
I'll say I was very tempted to binge watch it, but I was enjoying each episode so much, and there was so much going on in each episode, that I actually tried to slow myself down.
Sometimes
it helps to do that, because sometimes when you watch them all in a row, you start seeing things that you're not supposed to see.
Right. Or you miss stuff.
Yeah, or you miss stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, like the I noticed the Russian guys kept they kept getting lectured before they got killed. the first guy who got his head cut off with the car door, he had to put up with before that. I don't know what was worse for him. But that lecture he got beforehand, which was like, well, the past, the secretary gave him that long lecture before he got out of the car. He's like, well, the past lingers like the scent of burning wood in a closed room behind a door that's only opened on alternate Wednesdays.
Just take my hand off already.
Yeah, I don't know. Kill me, please. And then... And then probably, and then the worst one was that when the Daredevil's beating up all the Russian guys in the garage, right?
Yeah.
And he decides to sit. Well, he's taken out the last guy, and he's gonna teach him a moral lesson. And his line, this is probably the worst line in the show, is he says to him, "It hurts, doesn't it, being in pain?" That's what happens when you binge watch. You start noticing lines like. So, and you wonder, you know, the Russian, that would be the worst thing to hear right before you get knocked out, because you wouldn't be able to think straight. You'd be like, well, that's not really a moral lesson so much as a lesson about synonyms, isn't it?
And then they hit you harder. That's,
yeah, I mean, right. And
you just get hit harder then.
Right. And the other thing is, you know, if you're teaching somebody a lesson and you want them to remember, then it doesn't make sense to immediately give them a concussion.
Yeah, bring that up to them as they're beating you. See how that goes. All right, take that up with the committee and see how that goes.
Yeah. Oh,
that's funny.
Being in pain is always pretty likely to be uncomfortable.
So what do we think about how Daredevil tied into it? It was like it kept mentioning that it was recovering from the after effects of the Avenger film where they destroyed New York. Was that exciting? I like the insurance angle and the big bad multinational people who the what do you call it, a consortium or whatever you want to call them. I enjoyed that a little, but it didn't make or break it for me.
I didn't even, that went right past me.
No.
Because I think they were talking about the incident or something.
Yeah.
I assumed it was like something else, like the trade towers going down or something.
Oh.
That's how out of it I am.
Did you eventually figure it out, or did I just reveal that to you?
I did 5 seconds ago.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yep. Didn't even matter, really.
I guess it didn't, but... I mean, that's how you know it was Marvel.
Yeah, it was subtle because, thankfully, this series creates its own space in a way that it feels different from what's going on elsewhere in the Marvel, because, you know, there aren't flying people and giant gadgets and all that kind of, it's not that world about Marvel. This is sort of like the sewer alley of Marvel. this is sort of, you know, in the shadows.
This is, I think, Netflix. Crew. I think Netflix is the HBO of Marvel. Yeah, I mean, because it's a little.
But so when they mention the stuff in passing, that you don't need to know what they're talking about, but at the same time, it still feels like it's the same space somehow. I think they do a good job with it, but I don't think it's necessary that you knew that all of that was going on in the same universe, but there are hints that that was the case, and you know what they are now. Well, you know one very delicious hint that it is, but we'll talk about that later.
Delicious hint?
Yes. That it's the same universe as Marvel. That it's the same Marvel universe.
What's delicious hint?
Rosario.
Yeah. She's the same character.
Yep.
From?
Same name.
Yep.
I think, right?
From what episode? From what other Marvel?
Jessica Jones.
I know, but anything else?
Do we need anything else?
I was just thought maybe she was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or in the films, and I missed her.
Oh, no, I would just...
Okay, all right.
No, that's all I noticed, is that she shows up in...
Yeah.
Now, I have to say that on the negative, that the whole being taught by the other blind kung fu wizard, that was a little cheesy, a little cliche.
You didn't think Cara Dune coming in was a new...
That was a little bit much.
By the way, that's a grisly dude, man. You don't want him showing up in your living room. I'm going to tell you now.
I like his portrayal.
Yes.
The whole kung fu wizard thing seemed a little cliche, and I was willing to not let it bother me. But then the Madame Gao is shipping this chosen one onto the beach, onto the docks.
Right.
Yes, Golden Child.
And so now we've got a kung fu wizard trying to take out a Golden Child, and that got too magical for me and was too far out of what I.
I totally forgot about the Golden Child. What was that about?
Yeah. See.
That was.
I don't know. It's Madame Gao. She has some huge plan that of her own that and I assume it's to take over the world because she's a supervillain too. Mm-hmm. But Carradine is there to stop that from happening, to stop her from shipping this Golden Child into America. To take out the Golden Child. Anyway, she needs the Golden Child because she wants to turn him into some kind of weapon.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just sort of mentioned, and all of a sudden you got. First of all, it was kind of pointless to the whole first season. I'm sure they'll bring it back later. But second, I have a hard time suspending my disbelief for magic. give me science, not magic, not religion.
My and, type of guy.
Yeah, no, see.
So that bothered me.
Tom, that has been one of our ongoing challenges in modern sci-fi, because I'm with you. The reason I prefer science fiction to fantasy is because I like the connection to the possible. I like to be able to say that with the tools, with logic, with understanding, you can make the connection between the super and the practical. It's just
like midichlorians.
Please see. Don't even
see, here's the thing. There's always a suspension of disbelief when you find out about the powers. All right, you already had to do it when the kid goes blind and then he has super senses. Okay, I already gave them that.
Yeah.
And that's where I need it to end. After that, things have to be real. After that,
but see, here's the thing. And this was my early challenge as a comic book reader. Marvel likes magic, all right, and that is something that when early. That's why I was a DC guy as a kid growing up reading comic books. Marvel always threw in some dude with a hood and a magic staff. You know, there was always some spell came in there. I'm like, how are you going to use a spell against Superman? That mess used to bother me to no end. So Marvel has always had that magical component in there. And if you're going to be in the Marvel universe, even though you got aliens and you got, you know, iron suits and robot technology, you're going to have to put up with the fact that some dude's going to show up with an Ankh and wave his hand and magical doors. So you just got to try to hang in there with it. And thankfully, Marvel has managed to make it not so ridiculous. That has been one of my early concerns when I knew the Marvel Universe was going to take off the way it has. I was like, okay, when's the magic going to start coming in here? When's it coming? But they've managed to ground it fairly reasonably. Now, you know, we got stuff like Doctor Strange coming up, and we'll see how it goes.
That looks cool, though.
But I'm just saying, if anyone can make it work in the theater, it's got to be Marvel. But they are taking us into a direction that I am not entirely comfortable. So let's see how it goes. But oh yeah, there's magic. There's all kinds of mysticism and
magic
stuff going on now that we have got to brace ourselves for.
Okay. So, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think Daredevil to me, I wouldn't say it was a perfect. I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but I will say that I like it a lot and I really enjoyed it. And of the Marvel TV shows, it's my favorite.
Oh, well, that's true. I'll give you that.
Really?
Yeah.
Even with us talking about Jessica Jones, Daredevil is your favorite.
Absolutely.
Very good. You are. My guy. What about you, Tom?
Well, I don't know my genres as well as you guys do, but I prefer Jessica Jones to this. This has a much lighter tone, but there are little things in here that make it hard for me to suspend my disbelief. And there are some of the plot things. Well, getting back to Fisk, his whole deal, he seems to have a problem with, he doesn't like the seedy riffraff ruining his city. And his solution seems to be to sell crack and hookers. Sell more crack and hookers. And then he's frustrated.
But he wants them to be his CD riffraff. That's the difference.
He needs to control the CD riffraff. Therefore, you gotta be part of the system first and play the game in the system before you can change it, Tom.
I guess. He's blowing up an awful lot of city blocks for...
Yes.
He's not a sane.
There's one thing I do not like about Daredevil, and thankfully it did not come until the very, very end of the first season. That is his new costume.
Okay.
Now, I actually liked Blindfolded Ninja for I thought it was simple. It was just as raggedy and garage band as he is. I like that. So the instant, there's that magical moment where, you know, what's his name? The seamstress to the superheroes. He says, I've been working on this for like 3 weeks and at last it's all come together. And you're like, all right, let's see what he's come up with, you know? And he opens the box and I'm like, what? And you see that straps and buckles and all kinds of crazy stuff. Then, of course, the little horns. Look, it's hard to make the horns cool. I'm going to tell you that right now.
It was fine.
But when he pulled that mess out, I was like, it's a good thing he's blind. That's really what I was thinking when he pulled it out, because that mess was ridiculous. It was just too much going on. So that kind of took me out of it, honestly. It was just too
I much think you're going. Nitpicking. It was fine. I thought it was cute.
No, cute. Yeah, that's how superheroes, Doom of the Night, want to be perceived. It's adorable. It's
not cute in that way. I mean, it's fine.
He's a naughty devil now.
Oh my God, you guys, whatever.
I have a little pitchfork.
But he is called Daredevil.
I get it, but you don't have to do that literal. Does he rock a goatee? You know, it doesn't have to be that far when you're doing the devil. No.
Fine.
Little pants of ham at you.
Oh my God. Whatever. Fine. I thought it was fine. You guys are just way too critical. I think you're jealous because he has nice pecs. No?
You couldn't see that with his outfit. Seriously. Because, you know, everybody talks about, you know, nipples on costumes and insanity like that. I really thought his brawler, Dark Ninja, was simpler and better.
I agree.
It was cooler. It was definitely cooler. I don't think it bothered me as much as Carl, but I think it was definitely.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe there should be a fire and then like all the buckles burn off and then, you know, he can still wear the cowl. But something about all that going on just
Oh my God.
Yeah, unless he's going to be in a production of Cats or something.
Exactly. Oh my God, you guys. Okay, that's it. We're done here.
Now, did anybody... Okay, wait, one more.
Okay.
One more. Did anybody have a trouble believing the scene where Paige kills Paige is the blonde, kills the secretary of Fisk? He goes in there to talk to her, and he kind of threatens her, but he's also there to offer her a job.
Okay.
You remember that scene? And he goes in and he puts a loaded gun on the and he put, ta- places a loaded gun on the table. And he doesn't just put it in front of him either. He kind of pushes it out towards her.
Yeah.
And then he gets distracted and she shoots him. She grabs the gun and shoots him. And it just seemed a little too easy. It seemed hard to believe that he'd make such a move.
It seemed hard to believe he'd make such a move, but we've seen people do that so many times. Hand the person the gun and like, if you really think blah, 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 you should kill me. Here's the gun. And then they take the gun and they click the gun several times. There's nothing in the gun. You think I was stupid enough to die? I mean, then it would have been a cliche because we've seen that before. So this was different in that
it was actually loaded
and she actually blew his head off. Okay.
I thought it was kind of funny, actually, that happened. Because, no, seriously, the cliche would have been that she's too meek or too scared to
follow
through.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was glad to see her
stand up. Yeah, definitely.
It was his stupidity.
Right, well, that I found amusing though. That's the part that because of course he underestimated her in that situation. I'm sure he was thinking the same thing that he'd seen in all the movies, that there's no way that she's actually going to do it because she finds the gun too intimidating and the situation too out of her control. And
she values all human life and she wouldn't do it because she's a good guy. Yeah. Blah blah.
She says. What makes you think I haven't killed anybody before? And yeah, that was pretty badass too.
Yeah, yeah.
So good for her.
So I like to see. I thought that was the nutty, entertaining nature of Daredevil, where it just takes things that you've expected and turns it on the ear a little. Gives a little twist.
Except for the costume, though, Carl. Huh?
No, that's a twist. That's just not for the positive.
God.
Peacekeeper Barbie.
Oh, no.
Peacekeeper Barbie.
Okay, same guys. Stress. Oh, my God. Stress. Final thoughts. What do you expect to see or want to see a season two? Do you want a season two? Would it offend you to have a season two? Like, what?
Can't wait.
I'll watch a season two. Hurry up.
I'm ready for season two.
Yeah, I'll watch it. I'm interested. I want to see, like, I think the arc of, like, having a big bad per season and killing him at the end of the season is kind of played. So I'd like to see something different. However, it felt like there was two big bads throughout this.
Yeah.
Or three, or something. And then, like, Fisk kind of came in midway or something. No, he was, like, there the whole time and nobody could say his name. He was the big bad that could not be named and blah, blah.
I thought that was good because, okay, first of all, I like crescendos at the end of the season. I like to know that is the end of the season. So while admittedly that is a little cliched, thankfully there were so many villains and so much going on Daredevil that the fact that, you know, you got to put somebody down at the end of the season, there's plenty more left, and it's still interesting. So I like that there is a big brawl, kind of, you know, somebody goes down at the end of the season. I like that. So
and Wilson Fisk he's still kicking, right? He's just in jail now.
I forgot.
Me too.
yeah, because he finishes beating him up at the end. It's real hard. By the way, it's real hard to beat up Wilson Fisk for
some
reason. Seriously,
it's like fighting a truck.
He's got super fat or something.
Oh my God, no fat shaming.
No, this dude is a wall.
Yeah, why is he so powerful? Because, like,
that was a little.
Yeah, maybe he got.
Well, maybe because, like, he got beat as a child, he had to learn how to be tough. Or something.
But he's still around, so vote Wilson Fisk, people.
Yeah.
Killing his way to a better tomorrow.
Awesome.
Yeah, and that's our show. that is our show. We'd love your feedback. Give us a call at 773-336-2686. Go to our website. Leave us a comment at scifipartyline.com. We know you love to talk to us on Twitter, so please continue contacting us at Sci-Fi Party Line on Twitter and Facebook. We have a Facebook discussion group. We maybe glance at Google Plus, so you can use that if you'd like. And you can also download us on Stitcher Radio. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's less sexier than last time.
Yeah, I'm trying to tone it down. Bring on keep that under control.
Oh, let it out, Tom. Let it out. We got a whole other demographic we're trying to reach.
End of line.